Hello everyone, I'm George from Ireland. Well, thank you for coming back to my channel. This is about Hamad bin Khalifa Al Thani, so the erstwhile Emir of Qatar, who died just yesterday. So they died at the age of how old was it? Was it 74? Yeah, so that's it, born New Year's Day 1952. So he ruled over his country from 1995 to 2013, and I was actually living in the country at the time, bizarrely, and it was simply announced that summer, that summer holidays, I think it was right before I went to summer holidays, that he had assumed power, because his father, his father Khalifa bin Hamad Al Thani, had gone to Switzerland on holiday with medical treatment. At the middle of the night, his son simply proclaimed, "I am the new emir." So there was an opacity to the succession there. Apparently, it's not uncommon in the Gulf states for the father to be bloodlessly deposed by the son, and it's not primogeniture, so it's survival of the fittest. They try to move by consensus that men of the family decide. It's not automatically father to son, or certainly not the father to eldest son. Could be second, could be third, whoever's got the leadership qualities, or indeed could go to a nephew, a brother, could skip a generation, go straight to a grandson, could go to a cousin, a second cousin, whatever, but ideally have a backing of the majority of the male members of the family. Of course, female opinions didn't count for anything until recently. One of the few things can be said in favor of Hamad bin Khalifa Al Thani is that now women's opinions do carry some weight. Okay, so he was born there when it was still really a British protectorate, oil and gas only just being pumped. You know, 1950s, Qatar was one of the poorest countries in the world. I knew a Liverpudlian who was working there in the 90s, said his uncle had been there in the 50s, had about the sort of fifth car in the country. And the United Kingdom viewed it almost as like an extension of India. We're interested in India. Obviously, Indian independence had not been long before. The currency was even the Gulf rupee, which is tied to the Indian rupee. Now they've got rials and so on. So there's that peninsula jutting off the Arabian Peninsula into the Persian Gulf, or the Arabian Gulf, as Arabs like to call it. Sometimes they just say the Gulf, or which one? There are many gulfs around the world. There's that neutral term. Okay, so he learned English, which very few Qataris knew in the 1960s. Obviously brought up a Sunni Muslim. And their surname, even Al-Thani, means like the second. They'd only come into the to that peninsula, taking over in the late 19th century. Sort of had contacts, mid-19th century, contacts with the British, who suppressed piracy in the Arabian Gulf. There were pearl divers. Apart from then, it was very poor. So he went to Sandhurst, that's the Royal Military Academy of the United Kingdom, to train for military officer. So I don't know if he passed out or not, as in succeeded, not fainted. He came back, became a lieutenant colonel in Qatar's armed forces. And the British army was there until the early 1970s. And that's when Edward Heath said, you know, we just can't have bases east of Suez. We just can't afford it. The United Kingdom was broken by the Second World War. There was, high unemployment. There was inflation. There was the Ulster Troubles at home. Obviously, the risk of the Gulf War. There was a risk of a Cold War turning hot in Eastern Europe, or the rest of it. The British Army was not particularly welcome in the Middle East. The United Kingdom having too cozy with Israel. Back then, there was Arab solidarity behind Palestinian freedom. So the Qataris had to develop their own defense forces. Obviously, slightly worried that Saudi Arabia would invade, try and take over, or indeed Iran, and so on. They had a small Shia minority in that country. He set up a force called the Hamad Brigade, was promoted. So in 1977, he was proclaimed to be the heir apparent. You know, if his father's to die, he would immediately succeed. So crown prince, they called in other countries. They had various ministerial positions. And it was ruled by fiat. It really was an absolute monarchy. So it was just primitive despotism, not particularly unpopular. As the economy boomed, they had to bring in guest workers from India, from Pakistan, Sri Lanka, the Philippines, other countries, Sudan, Egypt, elsewhere. And that was it. And indeed, obviously, often the higher professions, they got Western professionals, particularly British ones, to move in to do some of these jobs. But they could be Americans, Canadians, Germans, French, and so on. QGPC, Qatar Gas and Petroleum Corporation, was the mainstay of the country. Qatar Airways was founded in 1993. I flew it in 1995, but it's a very new thing. and Doha Airport was much, much smaller. So most of the oil and gas was on the western coast of the country, Dukhan, Dukhan meaning smoke in Arabic. And so the country's getting rich very quick. There's an extraordinary pace of change, going from one of the poorest countries to one of the richest countries in like 40 years. And a lot of Qataris were still illiterate when he was born. Slavery had only just been abolished. It was officially abolished, unofficially lasted for decades. And so that was. Obviously, Arabic was the only official language. Sunni Islam was the state religion, perhaps not quite so puritanical as the Saudi Arabians. But there's obviously influenced by their much larger neighbor. When the United Arab Emirates was established in 1971, they were offered to join. Some people think it was a huge mistake that they didn't. Had this territorial dispute with Bahrain over the Huwar Islands. Now, the islands are just sandbars. They've got no value. But they carry with them the rights to the minerals under the sea. And there's oil and gas around there. You know, Bahrain, which is a tiny island off the coast of Saudi Arabia, that's why it's very rich. But Qatar is very rich as well. So he assumed power in 1995, and the United States Embassy released a statement. We recognize a change of leader has taken place. Nobody was killed. Some of the Qataris were asked about it, were rather uncomfortable about that. Remember the Hash House Harriers, people swearing, whatever, thanking the Emir. Well, which one? That was him. So his father continued to live abroad in Paris, later the UAE, came back to Qatar in 2004, not posing any threat. He died some years later. There was an attempt at to overthrow Hamad and bring his father back the following year, but it never got off the ground and anyone was killed. It suggested that the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Egypt, even Saudi were trying to bring back the father. Not sure whether this one was more amenable. Perhaps they thought the son was too much of a reformer. So he's married a number of times, and then how he is progressive is his wife appeared in public without a veil for the very first time. The Sheikha, the Emir's wife, she was never seen in public, but she began to do that. It was an unveiling of women. Women started to be encouraged to pursue higher education, to pursue careers. People went down from having like a dozen children to having about four and things like that. So wanted excellent healthcare. Then they set up Al Jazeera, meaning the island. That massive news network founded in 1996, they started to try and host big sporting events like, you know, football, so the under-18s World Cup, tennis events and things like that, tourism, health tourism and so on, financial services. So they were really kind of ahead of the curve, a bit like the UAE, that they couldn't rely on oil and gas forever. And then they had contacts with the Taliban. I mean, they recognized the Taliban as in a lot of Muslim countries did, and they even allowed to set up a sort of Taliban publicity office in about 2010, and that was useful for, I suppose, the United States to negotiate with them. Big backers of the Palestinian cause. They had a big falling out with the Saudis in 2016, but this was after Hamad handed over to his father. So anyway, they did hold elections on a non-party basis in 2004, and they allowed gender equality in that. So they haven't used the death penalty for quite a long time, but no trade unions, no right to strike. They managed to have the World Cup, but that partly because they really exploited workers. A word's often misused, but not in this case. So by liquefied natural gas, they made actually tons of money. He appeared in Western suits as well. He liked flying around the world and meeting various world leaders and so on. He visited Gaza and so on. He'd give a lot of humanitarian aid to the Palestinians. And all that is very admirable. So did a lot to improve education. So I suppose this was like despotisme éclairé. But in 2013, that's when he decided to abdicate and hand over to his son, Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. So there we go. So he was infirm for several years. He did a kidney transplant. He'd been on dialysis. He'd often gone to Switzerland for medical treatment and so on. So there he has died. There's national mourning. That's him. So he really modernized the country enormously. He had 24 children. How about that? All right. So anyway, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, then on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Okay. Goodbye.